Krista is a special person. She's when I first was nudged to check out Intergroup, one of the gentlemen from my men's group suggested that it might be a good idea to go down there and check it out, that it's a good opportunity to serve. Well, that's where I met Krista. And she has a personality that is so engaging and so positive that you don't really know somebody that well, but they end up having an impact on you in that little way. Well, that's what Krista was to me. Her energy and her vibe about AA and just being there was so positive and encouraging, and I thank you for that. And I tried to get Krista for another speaking engagement about a year ago, and it didn't work out. So I'm so pleased that she's able to do tonight. And just all of us, let's give a warm welcome to our sister Krista.
Well, I'm Krista, I'm an alcoholic. But I feel like this huge expectation now, like I'm gonna fail. Eric, thank you. Thanks for asking me to be here, and thanks to the board for saying yes, have her. So I was watching you introduce me, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this clear podium. I feel a little exposed. Like, I was just like, I don't know how I feel about it. So anyway, so thanks for having me here, and it's really awesome to see this, to be in this space, in this church. You know, we were here for a while, and then we left, and so to be back at this church and have this room full of members of Alcoholics Anonymous at a function is really cool. So I'm happy that I get to be here and that I get to be a part of it. I have a sobriety date. It's February 1st of 1999. Yeah, right? I know. I can't believe it. I was just actually thinking about that today. Like, holy crap. Hey, that's a long time. So I have a home group. It's Hole in the Donut. If you haven't heard of it, I don't know where you've been. Just kidding. No. But if you haven't heard of it, we meet on Tuesday nights in Roseville. It's a speaker meeting. There's some other members here. It's really fun. It's a male and a female speaker, and it's really just casual. Come in, and it's a great place to come and identify as an alcoholic. So if you haven't been there, we'd love to have you. And I have a sponsor. She's here. I know, and for those of you who know me, you know that she does. She's not local, so she's probably in here just to kind of get a litmus test to make sure what I tell her on the phone is not lies. So if she comes and asks you if this is what I'm really like, tell her the truth. So I'm super happy that she's here, and she is a sponsor, and I say that because I am not really good at being. It, told is the wrong word. I don't always take well to suggestions. So if somebody who's suggesting things to me is taking suggestions from another person, like it makes it easier for me to understand, and it makes it easier for me to swallow. Like when, you know, she suggests things, she suggests a lot of things. Sometimes I listen, sometimes I don't. I mean, let's just be honest. But it's really important for me to understand that it's not somebody out there that's just randomly living their life trying to fix me. So here we are, right? I'm happy to be here, and so we'll do a little bit of experience, strength, and hope. So, but I got to tell you guys about what happened today. So this is how it is in my life. So I have an in-ground pool in my backyard, and I needed to replace the motor on the pump. It's like, it's 8 volts. I can totally do this myself. So I go to the pool store, I buy the motor, and I come home, and I call my dad. I'm like, Dad, I think maybe you should just watch to make sure I'm doing it right, but I will do all the work. So of course he gets over it, and he's like, well, did you shut the power off to the pool house yet? I'm like, oh, okay. So we go out there. Okay. So, I mean, this is how it goes. And then he's like, well, did you test it? We can't figure out which switch. The one that's labeled pool house is not the right one. So we can't. So he's like, goes to his truck and he gets his tester and he comes. He's like, okay, well, it's off now. So then we go out there and like, I learned about all these new tools, like chain wrenches and like all this stuff that I'd never used before. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And I rip it out. And he's like, stop! Would you just slow down? He's like, it's still grounded, like the wire that goes into the ground, into the pool is still attached to it. And he's like, just get out of here. I just need you to get out of here, and I will just go. So, like, all right, I'll go clean the furniture or something. So I'm out, like, wiping down the furniture, and I go. He brings it out, and we go into the garage, and we sit it down, and So we're taking it apart, and there's these gaskets on it, and he's like, we go to put it back together, and he's showing me, and he's like, oh, grab this stuff. It's this silicone stuff that you put on there for the gasket so they don't dry out. I had no idea. I would have thrown that away because I thought it was part of the wrapper. So I pick it up. and it says magic lube. And I looked at my dad and I was like, magic lube? And like, there is too many jokes, and I'm standing there with my dad. And I was like, all right, God, I'm just going to slow down. Like, I need to just slow down. Like, there is my message. Like, I can't go there. Like, I'm just going to not take myself too seriously. So just so you guys know, the pool is open, operating, and I will finish putting chemicals in when I get home. So good news is it's working. We call my dad Big Shooter. So thanks to Big Shooter. So that's why, if that doesn't sound like hope, I guess I'm going to try and give you some. But, you know, I mean, that's an example of how I can get too far in my head, and I need to keep coming back to these meetings. So a little bit about what I was like. I didn't grow up actually that far from here. I am the oldest of three kids, all girls. My dad spent a lot of time in the garage, actually. Because my mom, my sisters and my mom and I all are as high strung as I am. Like, we all go 100 miles an hour. Like, if you come to a family dinner, like, you just gotta, like, open up your mouth and hope that somebody, there's some of my friends who have been to a family dinner, like, yes, that's exactly how it is. So my dad actually spent a lot of time in the garage drinking beer, which we don't blame him. He retired early and bought a house. Well, anyways, but yeah. So anyways, I did not have, my childhood was really great. If conditions made us an alcoholic, I'm in the wrong rooms. My parents didn't fight. My dad wasn't a big drinker. I mean, he was a very, like, I want to say blue collar drinker. He came home from work, had a couple of beers when he came home. I don't remember my parents ever fighting or yelling. I can remember two fights that my parents had, and, it was just, we had, at the house that I grew up in, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. I was really lucky. What I can tell you is that I didn't know how to identify it at the time, but I was kind of a irritable kid, and the fact that I was really bossy, and I was a control freak as a kid, and I'm tall. So I'm taller than all the other neighborhood kids, so I was a bit of a bully in the neighborhood, too. So, like, we had a great place. My house growing up was this great house to hang out at. So if you didn't do what I did when I wanted, you weren't coming to hang out at my house. So, I mean, like, this, so, like, that's how I was. Like, the big book talks about, you know, the guy, you know, directing the play. Like, that's what I was. But I had the power to get the kids to do what I wanted back then. So I don't remember thinking it's bad. But now that I'm an alcoholic and I look back, I'm like, ah, that's what it was. Good thing I'm here. So, I did not actually start drinking until later on in high school, and it was not a lot. The first time I drank, it was one beer, and it wasn't really a big deal. I didn't like to drink in high school. I was heavily involved with athletics. I was heavily involved with, I was busy. You know, I was a varsity swimmer, I was a varsity downhill skier, and I was a varsity softball player. So I was really busy. And I didn't want to risk not being able to participate in those events because I had my friends have to, you know, take 2 weeks suspension because they showed up to homecoming drunk. So, you know, it just wasn't worth the risk for me. And the people that I hung out with, it was the same thing. Like, there was beer around us, but I didn't like the taste of beer, so it really wasn't that big of a deal for me. When things changed for me was when I went to college. I decided to go to Duluth. One other thing, actually, in high school. I had feelings, right? Well, I didn't know what they were, but I had these things inside of me, and I didn't know how to deal with them. So most of the time, I was either really, really happy or really, really angry. And when I was angry, I was abusive. I was I would physically fight with my parents, and I would wreck furniture and slam doors. So, like, as a punishment, because I had wrecked so many doors in my bedroom in high school, my parents just took the bedroom door away. Like, I just, like, they literally, I had no bedroom door. Talk about humiliating for a high school student. But, you know, I mean, so that's kind of how I was in high school. I mean, I didn't really know. Like, I knew that something wasn't right, but I didn't know that I was an alcoholic, because I didn't know that alcohol was a solution. So what happened was, is I went to college, and I went to Duluth. It was far enough away where they couldn't stop in, but close enough where when I was having a meltdown, they would come get me. And, you know, I am the oldest, and so it just, my mother, it's so easy to manipulate her. Like, I love her. I love her, but she's so easy to manipulate. So I could call her. I mean, I was on a ski trip once in Colorado, and she's booking plane tickets to go out there, come out there and get me so I can come home because I'm homesick. Whereas, like, my sister, she's a mom, and my sister would be like, tough. Tough it out. But my mom, you can manipulate her. So I go up to University of Minnesota Duluth, and I'm not going to do any sports. I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm just going to focus on my studies. And we all know how well that turned out, right? So this is a pivotal point in my sobriety, or my story is, so I get up there, and my roommate knew somebody up there, and he got us some booze, he got us wine coolers, which I had never tasted before. So he got us 4 for the first night and 4 for the second night, and then school started the day 3. So we go out and we're gonna drink. I have the first 4, I proceed to have the second 4. I drink, because that's what we do. My roommate drinks her first 4 and goes back in. So I am super drunk, pass out in the, if you know anything about Duluth, Lake Superior Hall, like right in front of the dorms, and there's 8 floors, so I pass out. This is in the 90s, grunge, like I got flannel on and like Doc Martin boots, you know, like this crap. So I pass out in the front lawn, and I get up the next day, and everybody's like, oh my God, you're that girl. And I was like, I have arrived. Like, I have made friends. Like, everybody knows me already. Like, I'm already popular. I didn't even have to work like I did in high school. So what's on? Like, it's up. So we go. So, I mean, that's just kind of how my freshman year went. Like, we just binge drank. I had a lot of friends as a freshman. We had a lot of fun. My roommate left 2 weeks into my freshman year, and because she was homesick, and so I had my own room. Lake Superior Hall. It's a co-ed dorm, and the girls are on the top 3 floors, and the guys are on the first 3 floors, and so we had these T-shirts made that say, "Where girls sleep on top." Because that's how classy I am. Terrible. So anyways, we just had a lot of fun our freshman year. My sophomore year, I opted to live off campus. I didn't go to class very much. And when you don't go to class, you don't get to stay enrolled. So it is what it is. You know, I had to come home. And it was not the best day for my parents. You know, their daughter just couldn't get it together enough at college. Nothing really significant happened there. I just didn't go to class. I'd rather drink. I'd rather stay there and party and live in a dump and pay our rent by throwing keggers. It's one of the guys. So there was like this group of party houses in Duluth. Like, we all kind of were, it was just this network. And one of the guys that lived in a party house at the same time as mine was a member of Hole in the Donuts for like 3 years. He walked in the door and we were both like, oh my God, what's up? Can't believe you're here. Can't believe you're here. So it was kind of cool. He hasn't been there in a while, so I hope he's doing well. I bought something off Craigslist about a year ago, and it was his neighbor, so that's why, and he was look good, so. So I come home from college, and I get a job at a gas station, and I'm working at this gas station. It was a Conoco, and I drink at work every night. Like, I'm in the back with the extra gas nozzle trying to make things to tap the keg with, you know? And I would steal from them all the time. And I wouldn't steal, like, I wouldn't take money out of the register. But, okay, so you guys remember when a bottle of pop was only a buck? Yeah. Okay, so people would come up and they'd throw their dollar on the counter for their pop and they'd walk out the door. Well, I'd bring up a lottery ticket and I'd scratch it. And by the end of the night, you for sure are going to have 50, 60 bucks and that's enough to buy your booze. So in my mind, I'm not stealing, right? Because that is absolutely, and then we would go in, and then I would go in the cooler and I would smoke pot because you can't smell cold smoke. Honest to God, that's how bright I am. Like, we would sit in the cooler. Like, you go to get take your little kid to go get something to drink. Here's your juice, son. And they, like, this waft just comes out. Like, that just was awful. So, anyways, we call that gas station Chronicle. Like, it was terrible. Oh, so I get this brilliant idea that I was like, oh, I would meet Mr. Wonderful if I got, look at how cute the guys are that are mowing lawns. They're all shirtless. Like, I'm going to go get a job and I'm going to go do that. So my best friend and I go get a job mowing lawns. And of course he's there. And he is 2 weeks out of federal prison for manufacture of methamphetamines. So of course I'm in love immediately. And we are living together within a month. So, you know, I don't do that stuff, though. That's very dirty. That's not for me. If I'm going to do anything like that, it's cocaine because I like an all-natural drug. Like, honestly, that's how I think. Like, that's how sick I am. Good God. So, So he introduced me to this whole other world. What happened was I got to drink every single day the way I wanted to drink when I was with him. So I was not living with my parents, and I was living with somebody who provided a space and an opportunity for me to drink daily. And sometimes I slept, sometimes I didn't. If I didn't sleep, that was okay because it was enhanced by some other tool to allow me to keep going for a couple days at a time. The problem with that was he was very financially okay, so things were okay. When the two of us were in that state, heavily intoxicated generally, we would fight. And our fights weren't calling each other names, they were physical. And we lived in this townhouse on Summit, little place, and the neighbors would call the police on us. Because, I mean, you could hear this. So the cop comes, and it's a guy I went to high school with. Oh, yay. So he gets arrested, gets let out the next day. So, you know, this continues to happen. So now I'm physically fighting with him, and I go home, and I give my family the sob story. And, you know, I mean, after you drink for 3 days straight, I don't know about you guys, but I was not in a good way. So I would start to fight with my family. And so when I told you that I didn't know how to deal with my feelings, that I didn't know how to deal with anger, it would come out sideways. So the dad who spent the day with me telling me to just get out of the pool house because he can't handle me anymore is the same guy that I have kneed in the groin and spit in his face because I didn't get my way. And like I was that out of control at times. The cops were called many times at my parents' house. I was not allowed there, even if they were home. For sure when they were not home. But even if they were home, I was not allowed at their house. If I showed up, the neighbor would come out and stand on his deck and smoke cigarettes. He's like, I love when you come over because some good's going to happen. You know, like, he was kind of a bummer when you quit drinking. You know, my sister, because this is how it goes in my family, her car started on fire in the street one day. We don't ask questions, but when the fire department and the cops showed up, they asked my parents where I was. And my parents were like, my mom's like, she got sober. They're like, oh, thank God. Like, because they had come to the house enough because my parents would call them because I would fight with everybody. So, you know, they do the traditional, like, separate you. Yeah, but no, I know how that goes. So, anyways, I'm with Mr. Wonderful. I'm really not welcome anywhere, drinking every day, physically fighting with him. And if I talked to you, I would give you this long sob story about how I'm in this abusive relationship. I don't know how to get out. It was just bad. Anyways, the third time, The neighbors call the cops on us. Same cop comes, guy I went to high school with, and he's like, you got to do something different. And he called my parents, and the first thing that my mom said was, what'd she do? Because, of course, it was my fault, because that's their experience. And no, we will not come and get her. So he eventually convinced my father to come and get me. So my dad eventually came and picked me up in the middle of the night. This is the man who probably about a month earlier I'd spit in his face, told him I never wanted to see him again. So he came and got me, and when that happened, somehow, I'm not exactly clear on the details because it didn't involve me directly, but Mr. Wonderful told my parents everything about how much I was drinking, about all the enhancement tools, about all that stuff. And so my parents kind of staged, so this was on a Friday, and so I was allowed to stay at my parents' house for the weekend as long as I didn't drink. And it was Super Bowl weekend, so of course, I remember my dad, he pushed me up against the wall, and he put his hands around my throat, and he said, you can go to the Super Bowl party if you promise you won't drink. Okay. So go to the Super Bowl party, come home, and next morning we get up, and my mom says, you don't look good. I think you need to go to the doctor. I think your grandma and I, we all had a thyroid disorder. You look pretty thin. I think you need to have some blood drawn. So I think we should go to the doctor. Because I was about 50 pounds less than what I weigh right now is what I weighed when I got sober. And we get in the car, and I'm so self-absorbed, I don't even realize that my entire family's in the car to go to the doctor's with me. Like, both my sisters and my mom and dad. And I am, like, so selfish that I don't even notice this. So, good God. Ah. So, after about 20 minutes, I said to my mom, I'm like, where are we going? And she's like, oh, we're going to a different doctor. So we get to Fairview. And at the time, Fairview was in a separate building. So we walk in, and I always share this because I had no reason to be honest, but they put my family in one room, and they put me in one room. And this woman, she needs to stay. If I could find her, she saved my life, because her name was Vera, and she had an eye patch, and she had a duck tail down to here, and I was terrified to lie to her because I thought she fought with the person before me. Like, that's why she had an iPad. Like, I am terrified to not tell the truth. So when she's asking, like, how much do you drink? I got to tell her the truth because I might lose an eyeball. Like, that's what's going to happen if I don't tell the truth. So I tell her the truth, and she says, I think that inpatient treatment would be good for you. I think you have a problem. Okay. So, whatever. I go out, and then they bring us all together. My family's like, we would really like you to stay here. You know, that's what they're recommending. And I was like, well, I need to go home and get some things. And my mom, she's had like 1 hour of good Al-Anon in her life, and this was it. She said, I have a bag packed. It's in the car. So she handed me the bag, and I didn't get to go home. My mom has sucked it at being not codependent since then, but that 1 hour, like, God was with her. That 1 hour. Because the next day, I'm calling her. I'm like, I don't have any comfy pajamas. My nails look terrible. So here's my mom, like, bringing me up nail polish to treatment, because that's what matters, right? So, treatment was, it was great. It took me out of where I was at for 30 days. And at the end of treatment, they said, where are you going to go? And I said, back home. And they said, no, actually, we talked to your parents. You are not going home, and you're not going back to your boyfriend's, because he's actually in jail. So not going back there. They said, we suggest that you go to this three-quarter way house. It's in Minneapolis. So your sister will be here at 3 to take you for an interview. So I went there. And that's when my life actually really changed. So the day I moved in, my mom, of course, I tell you, my mom, she went and got new sheets with skiers on them because I was a downhill skier, and they were flannel to go to my new place because she's codependent. I love her, but like that's, so I move into this place, and my first night, my roommate was like, oh, can I sing you to sleep? And I was like, oh my God. Where am I? What has happened to me? Like my parents hate me. So the next day was a Saturday, And they, a bunch of people came up to my room and they said, we're going to this meeting, it's called Saturday Night Live. Do you want to come? And I said, okay. So I went and I walked in and the meeting is bigger than this. And there's young people and there's clapping and there's cute boys. And there's like, just like, I was like, if this is what AA is, like I can get on board. So I did. And you know, it doesn't matter what gets you here as long as you stay, right? Isn't that what they say? So it doesn't matter that cute boys got me here because it's what, and you know, because, and then shortly after that, you know, I didn't know how to make friends. Because I just, you know, I had spent the last, you know, 3 years, you know, the place I used to go to drink all the time underage was either Brady's, which is on Rice Street. For those of you who are St. Paul people, it's a dump. They'll never cut you off. Hog's Breast might cut you off, but Brady's will never cut you off. And there is a strip club on Rice and Larpenter, and I used to know it's called the Lamplighter because I am that classy. I would go drink there because I knew the bar, or I knew the bouncer. You know, I didn't know how to make friends. So this guy said to me, "There's a women's meeting at the same time as my men's meeting. You should go there. You could probably find a sponsor." So I did. And I asked this woman to sponsor me, and she was great. She said, "Are you busy Saturday night?" And I said, "No." She said, "Great, meet me at my house, and we're going to take a meeting to a treatment center." And I was like, "I got nothing to offer." And she said, "You've been out of treatment for 3 weeks. You got something to offer. So we're going." So, like, immediately, whoever was around, the people that were around me were forced me to get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I worked with her for over the next 30 days, and we started to go through the book. We started to talk about step one, and we got to step two, and I was like, ugh, yeah, I don't really do God. He forgot about me. Like, I have not been a good, like, I really believe that God forgot. Like, he just was, life was not going to, so I find out my best friend from high school is having a kegger for her birthday party, and she didn't invite me. Oh, I'm going to show her. Like, I'm going to go. Like, you can have fun sober. Like, watch this. And I'm like, my mom's like, "Hey, you should go. She should have invited you. She's your best friend." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm going." So I get there, and I pull in, and all these people that I drank with are there, and I literally cannot stand on my feet. Like, my legs will not hold me up being around the alcohol. And so I get in my car, and I leave, and I'm about a mile down the road, and I am sobbing hysterically, and I call my sponsor. I'm like, "You are right. I can't do this by myself. There might be a God. I can't." So it was kind of like that moment where I was like, "All right, I got to take some suggestions. I got to listen to some people." So, you know, she started to take me through the book. Did a four-step. Things started to really get better. At a year sober, things changed for me again. My parents got divorced, and it was nasty. It was nasty, 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 nasty when my parents separated. And I was not going to talk to my dad again, ever. I didn't like the way he treated my mom. And so it was over. And I was full of anger all over again. And I have not hit anybody at this point, or I had not wrecked any furniture, but I could feel it in me. And I'm sitting in this Saturday morning meeting that I used to go to with all these old men. They were, bless those guys' heart. And this new girl walks in, and they're like, "You should sponsor." I'm like, "No, I shouldn't, but I will take her to a meeting to find a one." So I took her to this women's meeting on Tuesday nights in Golden Valley, and a woman there, my sponsor now, shared about changing a relationship with her dad. And I was like, "I need that woman to sponsor me." So I asked her to sponsor me. And that's when my sobriety actually really changed. The woman that I had my first year was great for me. She was really compassionate. She was really what I needed at that time. But I have a really strong personality, if you haven't figured that out. And I will run you over. And then I'll back up and I'll do it again. And I'll probably like it. So Lisa has got a really strong personality too. So, I mean, I am really grateful that I have had the opportunity to have a sponsor that is willing to care more about me than me being mad at her. Does that make sense? Okay. So, I remember she told me I had to start praying for my dad, and I didn't really want to do that. Can you imagine how that would? So, you know, it took me about 2 years. And when I started talking to my dad again, my sisters and my mom quit talking to me because I, you know, I was a traitor at that point. You know, I kept praying. I kept showing up. I kept doing the things that you guys told me to do. And it wasn't like some therapy, kumbaya, we're all going to get together. It was the simple actions that allowed me to continue to show up as a member of my family. And what I can tell you today is that my parents carpool to my nieces and nephews' hockey games and lacrosse games. Like my parents, like I actually, my mom called today when my dad was over and she's like, I called him yesterday. He never called me back. And I was like, I'm not getting in the middle of this. You know, I mean, they just like, they talk all the time and they banter and like, you know, my mom was just talking about getting to retire and my dad called her to remind her that she gets Social Security from him. Like that's how well my parents get along these days. And it's not because of anything I did. It's because of everything that the God and you guys did. And you showed me, like people were in these rooms before me. You know, my sobriety hasn't always been perfect. I've had a lot of ups and downs. I always say that I feel like I'm on a 7-year cycle. So like at every 7 years, my butt's on fire. Something always happens at like year 7, then year 14. I was about 15 years sober and I was gonna cash it all in. I was gonna quit AA. I was done with all you guys. I was done. Enough of this God crap. My life blew up, you know, as life happens. But I gotta tell you what, the women, ladies, if you're hanging around with the guys, that's great. But if you're not, get yourself some girlfriends because the women saved my ass because they showed up at my house. My sponsor actually yelled at me and then left and then came back and yelled at me again. Literally, like got in her car and backed out of the driveway and then came back in and she's like, and another thing. But you know what? Like, people didn't give up on me. When I wanted to give up on myself, because it happens. You know, our book tells us that life's going to happen, and it does. And so when it does, I had spent the last 15 years being in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, so I had the people around me to save me. You know, my life is good today. Like I told you, I have this beautiful house. The God in my life continues to make sure I stay humble. And I'll tell you, one of my coworkers recently is a member of this fellowship, and we were talking. I wanted to get a hot tub, and my dog got sick. So they're with the hot tub fund. So I spend the next 6 months getting ready. I'm going to pay it all off. I'm going to get the hot tub. My couch breaks. Like literally, like I sit on my couch and it breaks. And I'm like, oh my God, I've gained so much weight. My couch breaks. Like, you know what I mean? Because, whoa, God, here I am. So then I got to go buy new furniture. So, I mean, this is how it goes. Like the God of my life wants me to be humble. Like every time I think I'm going to get ahead, he puts me right back where I need to be. And that's in the middle of you guys. Because once things get too good for me and too perfect, I forget where I came from. You know, then the figure, get new furniture. Now the puppy I just rescued had to have elbow surgery. So, I mean, I'm never that. My coworker is in this fellowship now. He said to me, he's like, you should just call that dog hot tub because you're never getting one. I know. It's so bad. I was like, oh, yeah, I should. So, you know, I mean, I do. Like, I have amazing people in my life. I have a job, and I work from home. They actually trust me to work from home. And I actually do work. I work really hard. You know, and I work for a really large company, and it's been really stressful lately. And my senior vice president called me last week because we were on a call recently, and he said, you sounded so stressed out. I want to make sure you're not going to quit. And I was not a good employee when I got sober. You guys taught me how to show up, be 15 minutes early so that when I started, we'd get there at 7:45. So when I start at 8, I'm ready to work at 8. Like, you guys showed me how to do that. You know, and we are going through some organizational changes at work. And I made a joke on the phone the other day, and my SEVP said, "You are not going anywhere." And he goes, I said, "I don't care." He said, "I don't care what happens. You are always going to work on my team, always." So, like, you know, I mean, that's the girl I was when I got sober was not that girl. So the fact is that, you know, I have this really great life, and I have it because I got on my knees in the morning and I asked God to help me keep sober. I told my sponsor things, and I told her things that I didn't necessarily want to do. I took suggestions when I didn't believe that they were going to work out, but they did. You know, I have, you know, I don't, I, you know, I mean, you guys, I can't think of what else it is that, you know, keep showing up, stay in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you a story about Dennis. I remember when I was in general service, and Dennis was the past delegate. He was really scary. He was like, "Oh, the elusive Dennis." Like, he was really smart. And he's, you know, he's kind of a big guy. He's tall. And I was, like, completely intimidated by him. Completely. One conversation with this man, and there's not an intimidating bone in his body. So it's like, you know, but I'll tell you, I remember, like, people like him when I came here that were still around, that were still, they were make. Dennis was that guy that was there to make sure that Alcoholics Anonymous was still meeting, so that when I was here, when I was ready, I had some place to go. So I feel like by staying in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm going to provide a place for when, bless my sister's heart, one of her kids probably will need to be here. I mean, so their father is a member of this fellowship, and the way that things are going at that house today, I'm pretty sure one of them's going to end up here. And you know what? If I keep showing up, they're going to have a place to go. So I really appreciate that you guys are here with me, and were here before me, and will continue to stay with me. So I'm going to pass with that.